hello and good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Magic the First Pioneers podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Finkel, sleepy here in Chicago, late at night for me, and we are a pioneer podcast all about the pioneer format. We keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer. You'll be enjoying my sleepy tones through the night, but I'm joined here by my co-host and our favorite recurring guest.
You guys, I mean, you sound like you got like a little, you know, sultry voice over there, and you're seducing, you know, with us, the combos and stuff like that. But hey, guys, everybody, it's Ryan. It's the afternoon for me for once. So usually I'm the one that's waking up super early in the day. So I am going to be bringing the energy today, I'm guessing. And my other co-host today, I'm guessing, is still waking up. So maybe, I don't know, what's your energy level today, guest?
Mine? I'm good at waking up when I need to, but I don't usually enjoy it, so.
Understood.
Yeah, but it's good to be here. It's good to, it means I'm going to have a productive day, and I'm excited to talk some brews.
Yeah, it's a really exciting day to be, the first couple weeks of a new set, always the most fun because you get to brew some fun things before all your dreams get smashed by somebody figuring out the actual best decks.
What, did you mean Phoenix? Maybe? Wink, wink?
Possibly. You know, it doesn't mean we can't run Phoenix in any of our brews today. But this is a new set kind of showcase, I guess. We're going to be looking at, we each brewed up, you know, about three decks, using some of the new cards, featuring some of the new cards, and just trying to see some of the fun things we do. Somehow I kind of ended up with almost three combo decks, you know, not really, but maybe sort of. I don't know about you guys.
I got three decks. Not combo, but
I got 2.5 decks, and compared to your guys, they're really boring. But I'd also like to talk about the green white deck that popped up.
I was almost gonna say that's a good place to start. So this is a green white angels deck. Is what took down the, was it the challenge that they won?
The challenge,
or was it the showcase?
No, it's a challenge. Showcase is not okay. For until 2 weeks from now, I think.
Got it. Okay, so this was a challenge. I know he beat you, I think, twice going through there. He beat Harry 13 final round.
Did he?
So it's not like he snuck into a win here, but to me, what do you guys think of this deck? I'm going to say I don't think
the
it's a very good deck. I don't think it's great. No, I don't think it's got, I don't think it gets there. I think that, you know, you and me, we tested out Green White Angels quite a bit, and I think we felt it was way too fair. It was kind of lacking. So he's now forcing the Exalted Deeds book into there, which I think a lot of people were unprepared for. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if this is the best shell for it. And I don't know if it synergizes with the main deck well enough for me to be that excited. Like, you know, I haven't tried it out. Maybe I'm underselling it. But I check, it doesn't pass for me.
I think it could be solid tier two. I think it only really ended up, you know, doing really well because people weren't prepared for it. But I think, you know, once people start prepping for it, that's, you know, it'll drop down a little bit in popularity as well as in power.
And we will say, you know, we tweeted out, people, put your Field of the Ruins in your decks. And it came true. Yeah. It's certainly coming true in Standard, it sounds like. And absolutely.
I think every deck I brewed today has Field of Ruin in there now because you said that.
What do you think, Akros? You've played against it.
So I actually think I'm a bit higher in the deck than you. I think it can still be built better. Like, the deck has Metallic Mimic, which I'm looking at it like when they played it against it, I was like, that card does not belong in the deck, I don't think, but maybe you're lacking Angels. In general, I think the deck is pretty well built, and I think it has a lot of good things going for it. Like, the fact that everything has 3 or 4 toughness, the fact that you get to play Skyclave Apparition and Coco in your deck, the fact that, like, people were not prepared for Book of Exalted Deeds, definitely made it their best deck for that tournament, I think. It has its problems. I don't see how this ever beats Lotus Field, and it has troubles with, like, Spirits, I think.
You can't lose, right? But if you have the book in play and you turn on Immutavolt.
Well, yes, but also they can, I think they should have answers in the sideboard, and that combo is a bit slow. Like, doing this on turn 4 without any other kind of pressure and disruption, you're probably dead before that, right?
Yeah, it's pretty rare to do it on turn 4 anyways.
But so I do think that the deck was really good for the weekend. I'm not sure how it's going to change moving forward. It definitely has issues with people like running, I don't know, Rampaging Ferocidon and Voiding Vortex and just stopping your deck from doing anything. And I'm a bit surprised to hear that it actually beat Mardin on blue-black, because that seems like a terrible matchup. But in general, I mean, I like the innovation. I was playing against it. I was like super psyched all the time. I basically lost to Company twice because that card's nuts.
I believe that.
And I'm excited to see where we can take this deck. And I agree that maybe this is not the best Book of Exalted Deeds deck, but I think it's the best deck for now that has it as like its plan B. So it's going to be interesting for sure, yeah.
So having said that, you know, I did brew up a Book of Exalted Deeds combo. Mm-hmm. I was gone all weekend, did not get to play in the challenge. You know, I can't claim that my deck is better, but I felt like it was a better shell for Book of Exalted Deeds. Mm-hmm. So that's the brew I wanted to start with, is this black-white book combo. So I did start with what was mostly an existing shell in black-white. We've seen a couple people have success with black-white Yorion decks. And I kind of thought that this was a perfect place to fit Book of Exalted Deeds in. So, you know, the Angels deck, it did a good job of synergizing with the, you know, having Angels part of Book. But I felt like this deck has a lot of incidental ways to gain three life, as well as, you know, just the best removal spells and protection for the kind of combo. So it's definitely not plan A that you have to be doing the Book of Exalted Deeds to win. But I do think that this is more set up to be able to do that, as well as to take advantage of the front side of Book of Exalted Deeds. So, for example, you know, Charming Prince, already great in the deck, gains three life sometimes. Basilica Bellhaunt, awesome card against aggro, gains three life. You've got Cling to Dust in the deck, good against a lot of decks right now like Phoenix, and it gains you life sometimes. So you can run all these kind of random things and then be able to book. And what I did to find a little bit of rooms, you know, I took out some of the top end. I brought in Karn the Great Creator along with a Karn sideboard, as well as his Book of Exalted Deeds. So I've got one of the books in the sideboard you can grab with Karn, which is cool. I also found some really cool, you know, you normally were seeing Karn in green decks. So getting to look at, you know, being able to put a portable hole in my sideboard and grab it with Karn is really sweet. The new Sphere of Annihilation is a great sideboard card that you can grab with Karn. You know, any of the Lurrus decks, when you can grab that and cast it after Karn, is just super cool. As well as, you know, just gotta add some spice to it. Put a Whip of Erebos in the sideboard. Kind of great with all Enter the Battlefield cards, and it gains you life.
I love it.
I was feeling that spice. I was really happy when I got to put a Whip in a deck, because it's been a long time. That's kind of the deck, you know. Enter the Battlefield things, Yorion, a lot of life gain, so it just stomps on aggro. What do you think of this kind of list as a shell for Book, or just in general?
Can I say something first?
I like that you have
Pithing Needle on the side. I was also considering playing that in some of my decks. And I'm guessing that's for Mutavault? No?
No. Well, it could
be. So they can't activate?
Otherwise, what you can do is you can grab Pithing Needle and put it Field of Ruin. Put it on your enemy's Field of Ruin. Well, yeah, sure. It's a card that's good anyways, but you can also use Pithing Needle to protect the combo by stopping your opponent's Field of Ruin.
And we haven't seen that a lot at all in sideboards lately, which is why I'm kind of interested in seeing it, you know, in your sideboard finally.
Mm-hmm. And again, it is there as an artifact that you can grab with Karn.
Cool. I mean, I was going to say, otherwise, it seems solid. I'm a little worried about card draw. I'm always worried about card draw in these types of decks, and I think you might fall behind against, like, some of the control decks. You know, or you don't have a lot of disruption either. Didn't really see, you know, like,
you know, for Skyclave Apparition, for Elite Spellbinder, which is kind of just tempo,
and the Bellhunt.
But you can also, you know, you can flicker.
Weren't you the one that told me like the only reason to play black is for Thoughtseize, like time and time again? Yeah.
You know, I didn't make room for that. That is something. Is that the deck that I was basing this on was able to run four Thoughtseize in the sideboard. I did not make room for that. With both Yorion taking up a slot as well as a lot of artifacts, but
I mean, you got Basilica, that's nice, but yeah, otherwise that's my two things, like card draw and like I said, hand disruption. What about you, Amit? What do you have to say?
I told you before the podcast that I am contractually obligated to hate Yorion decks, but I actually really like this one. I think this is pretty well built. As much as I hate Basilica Bellhaunt as a card, I think it's a pretty good card for Yorion deck, especially now that people are playing a bunch of aggro decks. It's a great grinding tool. Karn to fetch the book is super smart. I do think that you have to put the fourth hole in the deck, the portable hole, and just have like different removal spells in the sideboard or something.
Yeah, you know, I can still do Glass Casket in the sideboard, so maybe I can put the fourth hole main deck.
I still think these decks should probably play more ECDs because that card's messed up, but I like the list. White Euron decks have definitely gotten tons of tool recently. That's definitely one of them. And this is really interesting. Like, I might be tempted to actually try it at some point.
All right, that's a good compliment. I like that.
And despite my hatred towards the Euron card,
so I might not be able to convince you on the rest of mine. But
I did. Like, what really sold me was the Whip of Erebos in the sideboard. So I love the card. I never got to play it in standard. It's almost never actually good right now, but I mean, it's so sweet with Karn.
I like the Karn. Euron decks don't usually have Karn the Great Creator in them, right?
No.
Yeah, usually, and he's pretty good with some of, resetting Karn or bouncing like a Sky Sovereign or something.
I like the, how could I say? I like the marriage of Mono Green Planeswalkers, kind of like using Karn and having that wishboard, and then the Yorion decks. I like that a lot. It's very, very creative. This is the most creative I've ever seen you submit for a brew episode, I think.
Hey, I get wild sometimes. You know me. All right, what do you got for your
is
first
it me
deck
next?
Here, Ryan?
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. We're counting the green white one.
All right, I want to start with my jankiest and probably my worst deck. So,
see, this is the one I was most excited about of yours.
So, it's called
I almost want to try
Ooze
this
Your
one
Daddy. And it's basically Ooze Tribal, but also it is Hardened Scales. So, it's got the Hardened Scales, kind of package here, except I'm playing a lot of Oozes. So, Experiment 1 is a human Ooze, so it gets bigger whenever you play something bigger than it. And you can move two counters to regenerate it, so you get a kind of a reoccurring threat that's going to get benefits from your Hardened Scales being played. It's got Scavenging Ooze, four of those. That's never not good in this format. I think it's always going to do a good job, especially against your aggro matchups and whatnot. Voracious Hydra is kind of like removal, but as well as it's not an ooze, of course, but still it's removal. I see it more as a removal spell. Than being an actual use, and just having the ability to get those counters on it and trample is really nice. Winding Constrictor, of course, you need to have that if you're playing Scales. Rishkar, because we're playing a lot of X mana cards, I think being able to tap and bring out bigger and bigger creatures is really good. I'm also playing Biogenic Ooze, which is the 5 mana 2/2 that puts another 2/2 ooze into play when you play it. And at the end step, all your oozes get +1/+1 counters, and you can pay 4 mana to create another ooze creature. So,
And that's the exciting part.
And then, of course,
part.
One of
like
the newer cards right there that I have is Ochre Jelly, which is the X green card that I was talking about in the set review episode that I was really excited about. It's a trample, 0/0, comes into play with X +1/+1 counters, and if it dies, if it had two or more counters, it splits with half that amount of counters on each one. So you'll get two back, and if you have Hardened Scales in play, they become 2/2s again at the end of turn.
So it's not two back. It's only one version comes back. It doesn't split into two. You just get one of them.
But half
but
of
it.
Oh, okay. So it just never dies. Okay. I thought it splits into two. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think you might have said that on the set review, too. And I was listening to that. I was like, wait a minute. That's not quite right. If you do go Hardened Scales and then turn to Ochre Jelly and they're like a red deck and they don't have a way to... Well, I guess... Yeah, if they don't have a way to exile it, then it'll kind of just keep coming back.
Well, I would say if they put -1/-1 counters on it, that gets rid of it, though, right?
Depending. So if they have Soulscar Mage and they, you have this as a 2/2, they shock it, it will come back. It will see that it dies with 2-2/-2 counters on it, or 2-1/-1 counters on it, 2+1/+1 counters on it, because the state-based effect for it dying happens before the state-based effect for those canceling each other.
So you don't get anything back in that situation.
No, do get something back. The only situation would be that, if it was on 3 and then they took 2 away and then dealt it 1 more damage, then you wouldn't get anything back.
But yeah, I think it's
weird interaction.
Trample's really nice. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the traditional one has the protection and reach and trample. What is it? The serpent and stuff like that. But I'm going for the ooze. I'm going all in on ooze. Mm-hmm. And I did actually consider the companion, but I had no idea how it worked.
which
ooze
companion?
Oh, four mana.
Kahira?
No, four mana.
No.
Makes...
Oh,
no,
Umori.
I don't think Kahira counts.
Is it Mori or whatever? Yeah.
Umori.
Yeah, I have no idea how that works. You have to choose a type, so I guess you can't play anything except for creatures if you play that.
Yeah.
So I was like, eh.
Yeah, I don't think you want that. Not, you don't want to lose hardened scales.
So yeah, Ozolith is another one, just because you're making these huge trample creatures, or, you know, and you're just continuously able to play a threat. You know, the Ochre Jelly is continuously coming back. And Vivian, of course, it's counters and gives stuff trample, which is nice. And then in the sideboard, I got a little bit more oozy. I have Gelatinous Cube, which is...
I like
4/3 for 4 mana. It's a black card, and it has Engulf. It's like that black Fiend Hunter effect we said. So it exiles a non-ooze creature until it leaves the battlefield, and you can pay X and black, and whatever card it was eating or exiled goes into their graveyard, which I think is great.
So it finishes digesting and drops off the body. I like that.
And I did... And I did want to point out one more card that I thought was neat. In the old Scales decks, they were playing Calatis. And in this one, I'm trying out Valentine, Dean of the Vein, which kind of has a similar effect. You know, at one mana, you know, they have to exile it. And then you can pay two and get a token if you want. But the backside of this, it says whenever you gain life, you can pay one. And if you do, you put a counter on each creature you control with those creatures. You can pay one and... You put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control, and those creatures gain trample until the end of turn. So it's kind of got two sides. You know, if you don't need it, you can cast it as Lissette, and if you do need that effect early on, you cast it as Valentine. So it kind of works well with the whole theme, I think.
But as far as life gain, you've got Scavenging Ooze and the front side of Valentine. It looks like are the only ones.
Yeah, I guess so. But ooze is each time. You know, you pay one mana. And then you pay another mana, and then you get counters on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But
2 mana put counters on your whole team sounds really good to me.
That does seem pretty good.
So what do you guys think?
So do you want to start on this?
Sure. So first of all, I really like the sideboard choices. Like Valentine and Gelatinous Cube are really awesome choices. And you have good disruption. And of course, I think Ozolith and Scales are just messed up cards, and we should try and find a shell for them. And Ochre Jelly just being like unkillable with pretty much both is very interesting to me. I mean, I looked at the card first and I thought this was a meme, right? I was like, yeah, this card is like the cool card that's never gonna see play. And then you mentioned it in one of the episodes we had, I think. I was like, well, maybe this is actually good. I don't think necessarily you have to go oozes, although I do appreciate your choice on that. Biogenic Ooze is one of my favorite cards ever. Just such a strong card. Also unbeatable and limited.
yeah.
And I might look at something like this to try, like at some point. Maybe not all in on the oozes. Like I don't like Experiment 1, for example. I try to be less controlling, but less aggro, but... I really like the card choices. I really think this could have legs.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that stands out for me is, you know, exactly four Elvish Mystic, but no Llanowar Elf. I wonder if Experiment 1 just being Llanowar Elf, even losing some of the ooze synergy would be better there. Couple things that I had a thought on is that, you know, you're missing some good oozes in that Realmwalker and Masked Vandal are both options for you.
Oh, the changelings, but they're like
the
two mana for the counter on. What do they do again? I was considering the changelings.
So there is one that's like a 1/1
you
that
play
you can
from
put
the
a
top
counter
of your
on
library,
creature
right?
enters. That's probably not playable. Yeah, so the 2/3 that you can play from the top of your library is not a bad card against grindy matchups. And the Masked Vandal is a 1/3 that destroys an artifact or enchantment when it enters.
That's actually not bad for the sideboard, I think. Maybe instead of...
Yeah, that's definitely a sideboard
card. Decay, maybe?
The last thing I wanted to hear about, and regarding Decay specifically, is, you know, I was looking at... I also have a green... blacklist that we'll talk about, and Abrupt Decay is interesting, but what do you guys think about running Assassin's Trophy in a world where there's this Mutavault Book of Exalted Deed coming
I guess that would be better, because then you can kill that and get rid of it.
Yeah, it can kill a land, and that, you know, it would be an alternative to if you don't want to run these Field of the Ruins or don't want to run, you know, too many answers to that.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's a good point, because the mana base for these decks was always really, like, a bit sketchy. I don't know how it actually works out. Need to play it a bit more. But yeah, I like playing some number of trophies, especially when you don't have a lot of cheap interaction for Mutavault otherwise. Because one of the best ways to beat that combo is just have like a shock open and then they can't do the combo. And this deck can't really do that.
Yeah, your removal's all...
you have like three pushes speed. And then the rest is like Voracious Hydra. And that's not good enough.
And then Vivian. Yeah, there's another... Fights.
Yeah, of course.
And then we get Gelatinous Cube. You can eat stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Eat them. Digest
you guys
them.
Ever watch that old movie?
It's worth noting.
Did you ever watch The Blob? It's like an old 50s movie.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen that one.
No, me neither.
I'm so old.
Worth noting that you can Abrupt Decay the Book of Exalted Deeds. So unless they go like full 7 mana combo in one turn... Even if they do that, you can probably... Like, if they go 7 mana, you can respond to the Mutavault activation. No, but they think it's Secundus. Anyway, if...
It's not... Yeah. They can't activate Book at instant speed, so you should...
Oh, well, right. No, yeah, but they can activate the Mutavault before, right?
Yeah, they can activate the Mutavault, play it, and then activate it. You know, they'd have to kind of expect that you have a Abrupt Decay in hand.
Exactly, Decay, because, yeah, I agree.
I'm surprised you guys like this as much. I thought it was going to be like, no, this is jank.
No, I'd consider trying this. I think Ochre Jelly is very interesting. I think that's a card I want to try when I get a chance.
Like, I do think that this has some more meme-y choices here, which is absolutely fine because you went for the oozes and I appreciate that. But I think like the Shell of Hardened Scales is a bit neglected in the format. So, and Ochre Jelly might actually be good there, despite looking like a very casual card, to me at least. So cool. I like it.
Move on to Amets then, next.
Okay. Yeah, let's go to see in one of your brews here.
I'm kind of embarrassed though. My brews are not as interesting as your brews. So, should we start with the... Well, we can start with the Demilich build I had. The one that's not a Prowess build. So, basically I was kind of looking at my old Phoenixless Phoenix deck. Which I used to play with like Kraken Drake, and I played a threat suit of Kraken Drake, Arcanist, and Sprite Dragon, and I was playing Maximize Velocity to pump Arcanist and Drake, which I thought was really smart at the time, and then I kind of realized it wasn't very good after playing with it for a bit. And then I was looking at Demilich, and I think Demilich is really, really goes well with both Arcanist and Sprite Dragon because of the incentives they give you and how they play together. Arcanist is probably the only way to play Demilich on turn 3 in the format. Because it lets you play an instant speed for like 0 mana on turn 3. So
yeah, unless you're playing like that adventure card that can make 1 mana, but you don't want to be playing that.
Oh, that's a smart one.
Oh, no. Is it? No.
I mean, it's an interesting one. It's probably not very good, but I think this is the kind of line of thinking we have to look at for Demilich. It's probably, again, not worth it, as you said, but it's definitely out there.
Now, does Demilich target when it attacks?
Oh, yes. It does. It does target when it attacks. Okay. So, basically,
I was just thinking if you can cast Adventures from the yard, but no, you can't.
No, you can't, unfortunately. Not as far as I can tell. So, basically, I think that people are very high on Demilich for a good reason. Like, the card seems very strong to me, but... I also think they overvalue the recasting it part compared to just it being a good tempo play. So I kind of tried to build a deck which has a lot of 1-mana spells and a lot of them being interactive. And then you can supplement those with the strong pile of Treasure Cruise, Iteration, and Strategic Planning to pull ahead when you need to. Planning can also bin the Demilich, which is going to come up, I think. But Demilich competing from the yard... with the Treasure Cruise is going to be an issue. But basically I was looking at like, okay, we can play all these strong cards that give you advantage. The Demilich is a good tempo play, which this deck was lacking before. And you might even be able to play Reckless Rage in this deck, which, again, might be a bit of a meme when you have only 12 creatures, but it at least looked interesting to me because you can't really afford to run a bunch of lightning access when you don't have Phoenix. I think this could be a good damage deck. I'm not sold on this card actually being good in Pioneer because I think it's a bit slow and like vulnerable and hard to recast from the yard, but I'm excited to try it because any deck that plays Iteration, Cruise, and a bunch of one mana spells is gonna have at least a fighting chance.
What's the full like text on Demolich against? Is when it attacks, what happens?
So it's a 4/3 for quad blue. It costs one blue less for each instant sorcery if cast for the turn. When it attacks, you exile up to one target instant or sorcery from your graveyard. You copy it, you may cast it, which means you have to pay the mana for the copy. And you may cast damage from your graveyard by exiling four instant and sorcery cards in addition to paying its other costs. So I was kind of talking to some friends about damage. And I was like, yeah, but you have to pay the mana. And they were like, yeah, but does it really matter? And I was thinking, yeah, I'll gladly pay two mana for more iterations. So it's probably fine. And you're almost never flashing back anything that's more expensive than this. So
I have another question.
I think it's good.
So it says whenever you cast it, the spell costs blue less to cast for each instant sorcery you cast this turn. Dreadhorde Arcanist cast, right, when you attack?
Yeah.
So you play something on turn one, you play Arcanist, and you play three spells and attack with Arcanist, you can play those for free afterwards, right? So you can put it down on turn three, basically.
Okay. Yeah, that's why I like Arcanist with Demolich. And I also think that people are... like, I think Demolich is more often than not going to cost, like, actual two mana. What you're actually going to do is just, like, go turn four, White Sash Magma Spray, or, like, Opt Magma Spray, and then just play Demolich for two mana, which is a great deal. You don't actually have to make it free in this deck. So, again, I don't know how to evaluate the card. I think it has potential. I'm excited to try it. I'll probably cut the Reckless Rages because looking at the deck now, I'm like, we can't cast those before turn like four or something.
Oh, that could be tough. Yeah.
But we're going to give it a shot.
I like it. I'm interested. There's definitely a lot of... I'm wondering how well it works, and I think it's hard to say without trying it. Let us know, certainly. Have you gotten a chance? How much does Demi-Lich fold to Graveyard Hate compared to something like Phoenix?
So that's something that definitely worried me. You do get to play Sprite Dragon in the main deck, which is a great way to beat Graveyard Hate. And that's why I'm playing Drakes in the sideboard right now, even though the rest of the sideboard is a bit of a mess.
Okay.
I still think Drakes are probably the best line of play you have against Graveyard Hate. But in general, I think Demolich just lets you go. Like, if they don't have the Graveyard Hate, you probably bury them in card advantage with it and Arcanist. And if they do have it, you can just play Dragon and Demolich and Drake and just try and go aggro on them, which definitely works, especially if they waste cards on Graveyard Hate.
Okay.
That's my experience usually. But yeah, I think Demolich, if they have like Rest in Peace out, Demolich is worse than Phoenix, and I think that's a big downside for the card.
Yeah, I mean, I already kind of asked what I wanted to ask. I would only say, like, could you possibly put Demolich in the same deck as a Phoenix, or is it one or the other?
So I think you could. I am a bit worried that deck is very vulnerable to Graveyard Hate, and I'm not exactly sure. Like, I think it's going to be hard to actually, you know, get both Demolich and Phoenix on the same turn before turn like six or seven, but maybe that's the way to go. I think it's going to be super hard to actually build that deck, so I'm excited to try.
I'm interested. I'll wait to see the results and see how it develops or evolves. Head back to Kevin then for the next one?
Yeah, sounds good. I'm going to go ahead and talk about... I actually am really excited about this deck. And I feel like it's going to look like a meme, but I hope you get a chance to try it out because it's actually a blast and plays surprisingly better than I would have thought. So this is a Bard class deck. So quick going over Bard class in case you guys weren't paying attention during our spoiler episode or haven't looked at it. Red-green enchantment. The first level, like the one that gets when it comes in, is that legendary creatures you control enter with an additional +1/+1 counter on them. The level 2, as it costs another green and a red, legendary spells cast green and red less to cast. it only affects the colored amount. And if you do get to it, there is a level 3. You can pay 5, and then whenever you cast a legendary spell, you exile the top 2 of your library and can pay them this turn. So basically what we're doing is we're just going to run a whole bunch of red and green legendary creatures and be a beat-down deck that gets to really cheat on mana thanks to Bard class, as well as have some sweet, sweet go over the top. If you ever activate that level 3, you can often just play your entire library that turn and win. So what's cool about this deck is that, again, I was basically taking an existing shell of our red-green aggro decks, and a lot of these pieces just fit in so well. So, you know, we were already playing Burning Tree Emissary and Galley of the Endless Dance. Zergo is a great one-drop for this kind of deck. Targnar, the new Gnoll, plays really well. You know, he's only a 2-2, but he, when he attacks, if you've attacked with 6 or more power this turn, all of your creatures get +1/+0. That's really easy to turn on in a deck with, you know, Reckless Bushwhacker, with strong aggro creatures, with Domri, who adds to your thing. And then kind of the rest of the deck I filled out with other various red and green. You know, Clothis is huge, but there's some interesting ones like Xenagos or Radha, which add mana. You know, Grumgully is another 3-drop that adds some strength. I think tuning definitely needs to be done on this deck. Mm-hmm. It's a little messy, but there's a lot of power here. You know, being able to cast Oath of Nissa for free once you've turned on Bard class, being able to cast Mox Ambers and, you know, all of your cards turn it on. You know, your Planeswalkers cost 1 mana, your Clothis costs 1 mana. All these things just turn out to a really aggressive deck that can just be super explosive. And even if you don't find Bard class, it's still just that red-green aggro deck that we've been seeing in the format.
Mm.
So that's my sales pitch. What do you guys think? You know, I know it looks messy, you know, a lot of threes because there's a lot of legendary creatures, but I've been really liking testing this deck.
Yeah, what do you want to say, Emmett? Do you have anything you want to talk about first?
Mm-hmm. So I wasn't a believer in Bard class. I have a really good friend who tried to convince me this card's good. I'm not sure I'm sold on it yet. But okay. I really like I didn't notice it made Oath of Nissa cheaper, and we have Mox Ember, which is an Embercleave. Like, I can get behind some of these cards. The more I look at this, the more this seems like just a decent red green aggro deck. Not playing elves kind of scares me, and I think this deck probably needs to play PNLR because that seems like the best way to get multiple bodies on a legend, which could be nice here. Otherwise, I mean, I don't know, this seems cool. I'm just worried that like Bard class is inherently a problematic because you have to run so many legends, right?
The second Bard class definitely hurts. That's where I think there's a little weakness, but I was like, you know, Bard class doesn't seem that good, and then you turn on the second ability and you like immediately get your mana back. Often, you know, if you can, you know, play it turn, like the best is like, you know, you'll play a Burning Tree Emissary Bard class turn 2. Turn 3, you play like 2 or 3 legends because you just activate it and everything becomes almost free. I love free spells, so I'm happy to play this kind of deck.
Yeah, especially with Mox Ember. I think this could give it like the explosive factor I was missing before when looking at these kind of decks. It's very interesting. I mean, it's not the kind of deck that I usually play, but I think it has... it probably has some potential. I love Hazoret too in the sideboard. Like, I think we could probably clean up the main deck a bit. Toski is also insane. Like, all of these cards are super messed up in general. So I love the Fit of Ruins in the sideboard.
I didn't have a great way to, you know, I was looking at like everything you can do to destroy lands. I don't think like a 4-mana land destruction spell is as good as, you know, just siding a couple Field of Ruins.
You could play Cleansing Wildfire, right?
Yeah, you could. You definitely could.
I don't know if I'm sold on Ancient Animus. I mean, I know you're going for the fight effect at instant speed, but I think I'd rather just have, like, Domri Raid or something like that, which also does a fight effect.
Or Domri's Ambush.
That's true, Domri's Ambush. Mm-hmm. Well, Domri's Ambush is the same thing, isn't it? What is Domri's Ambush?
It is very close. It's close to the same thing, except it doesn't have to be legendary, and then your BTE and your Bushwhacker can also get the counter.
So it's an... is that one? That one's a sorcery is the biggest difference, but it's also power and not and just
it's... and it's Planeswalker or
a creature. Oh, yeah, it's not a fight, yeah. And it's Planeswalker or a creature, yeah. Domri's Ambush is pretty messed up, honestly.
Yeah that's like actually a pretty good card.
So, yeah, I get Ancient Animus. I like everything else a lot.
probably like my one of Arlencourt.
Yeah.
That can probably just be another Domri or something. Domri's just been gross.
And I don't know if Xenagos would be main. I think Xenagos should be sideboard, maybe.
So Xenagos is actually really cool. You know, it's, I think one of the biggest things is that if you get a point where you turn Bard class to level 3, you turn through your deck, find Xenagos, make like 8 mana, play 3 Reckless Bushwhackers and kill them.
Oh, okay.
It happens a lot, actually. Like, once you've hit one or two spells, you know, your Mox Ambers are just a freebie, your Zergo's a freebie, your Oath of Nyssa is a double freebie.
I would say...
You're getting like 3 cards off
of it. I would say the other thing I don't really like, I don't like the Eska. I think maybe just go to Grimgullies as well. I don't know if someone else said that.
Yeah, I wonder why the Eska in the first place on this one.
Just another mana source, you know, being able to pump some mana to turn on Targnar or to throw it on an Embercleave.
Mm. Now, I like the Mox Ember, I think.
I like that angle too.
Because, you know, you play it on turn one or turn two and you're going to... turn one or turn two and you're going to be fine, I think, because you have Targnar, you have Galia... And, you know, a couple other things. So you should be able to, realistically... And you have Oath of Nyssa as well. So yeah, it shouldn't be a problem to activate it. All right. Is that okay?
Move on. That's all I got for that
My
one.
My turn next.
Yeah, definitely.
Then? Or is that okay?
Yes, please.
So a couple shows back, I did my red-white dwarves deck. It was a super meme-y deck. I was playing a 1-3, one mana dwarf because we didn't have any good... one mana dwarves, and you guys are like, don't do that. And I tried out Thraben Inspector a little bit, but I'm like, eh. So basically, I feel like we finally got to the point where we can play equipment. So we're still lacking in that one drop department. But as Amit can attest to, dwarves not bad. You know, I played against them with it before. So the
what's not bad?
The dwarves, red white dwarves. I beat you with it, with the double strike dragon and all that stuff. But I'm going more for like equipment this time. So base is mostly the same. Toolcraft Exemplar, Magda. I also have Veteran Motorist. This time I'm playing Metallic Mimic and also Dwarf Hold Champion. So Mimic is just another dwarf body and. Dwarfhold Champion's a new one. It's a 3-1 for one and a white, and as long as it's equipped, it gets +0/+2. So we're going to play a lot of equipment in here. I have the Dancing Sword is the new one. It's a creature gets +2/+1, and when it dies, you get a 2-1 construct with Ward 1. And it's equipped 1, so it's super easy to attach. We have Goblin Morningstar, which is equipped creature gets +1/+0 on trample, and equip 2, and then you can get a goblin token if you play that, so I like the trample. Heart of Cairn's still in here. Bearded Axe is another one I thought I would try out, just because you get +1/+1 for each dwarf equipment and vehicle, and that's pretty much all we're playing, you know, in this deck. Godsend.
I like that. That's pretty meme. It's pretty meme.
Godsend, I thought, was a really cool card that's never seen any play in any kind of, you know, constructed deck. So it's a 1 white legendary artifact from Journey to Nyx, I think. Equipped creature gets 3/+3, and when it blocks or becomes blocked by more than one creature, you can exile one of those creatures, and your opponents can't cast the same name as the cards exiled with Godsend. So they're pretty much screwed. Like, I guess the rest of the game, unless they destroy that. Of course, we got Embercleave as always, and then Plate Armor was another card that I thought was cool. I like that you can pretty much play it for free if you have a lot of equipment in play. If you got one or two, you know, you can basically equip it for like, you know, for one mana or even three, you know, depending on how many you got in play at that turn. I don't like the fact that it's 3 mana to like start off, though. That's kind of a drawback. And then I'm also playing Fighter class. So this is when it enters the battlefield, you can search your library for an equipment card, reveal it and put it into your hand and then shuffle. And then when you level 2, you pay 3 mana. Your equip abilities cost 2 less to activate, so you can pretty much equip all your stuff for free, no problem. And it's not just, and I'm guessing you can equip as much as you want, right?
Yeah. So what are you looking at though?
That level 2 for the fighter class.
Yeah, like, but what are we trying to do?
I don't know. Is there something I can do? Like, whenever you unequip something, it deals damage? I don't know if there's something like that, but I'll have to look into that. And then, of course, the level 5, whenever a creature attacks, up to one creature blocks it, this combat. That's not, we're never going to use that. Basically, we're just going to use the first thing to search for something, and then the second one to equip. So that makes it a lot easier to grab, you know, your equipment, which I have 11 right now. I feel it's still kind of a little bit low. Maybe I should add in, like, a few more. But I like that, you know, that's like adds an extra 2, basically. And then sideboard, we have Portable Hole, you know, Soul Guide Lantern, Harvester, and, you know, Immortal Suns, Sky Sovereign. Basically, a lot of this old stuff that I had when I was playing the Dwarves deck. And the other big change I have, I don't know if I said it, SRAM Senior Edificer, because I'm playing all of these equipment and vehicles, you know, in the same deck. It's card draw. So I figured, you know, he's a dwarf and it's card draw. It's nice. And also Goldspan Dragon, because he's going to add more treasure tokens to let me search up other stuff. So, yeah, what do you guys think? I think this thing needs a lot of work, but I'd like to hear what you have to say.
So, yeah, I feel like you probably need to, you know, you've got a lot of one of equipment. I think that if this deck works, you probably need to figure out which are the best ones and kind of just play those. Like, maybe lose the Bearded Axe, lose the Godsend, use a couple of the... What is the mace?
The one equip.
And Maul of the Skyclaves, yeah.
I was thinking
Maul of the Skyclaves, I think, would make more sense. Maybe get Dancing Sword instead of, like, this Morning Star and some other things. Like, Dancing Swords actually seems pretty good. Embercleave's perfectly fine. But, you know, kind of find which ones are actually that good and then just get a few copies of those rather than having a... variety. I don't feel like there's going to be a lot of times where we'll be like, oh, I really want this instead of that or this instead of that.
I kind of feel like, I know there was a core set out there, so core cards that, you know, KOR, that actually kind of worked with this stuff.
Oh, the equipment.
Like, whenever you equip something, you get +1/+1 or you get to draw a card or something like that, and plus there's Nahiri out there as well.
Hey, what about that guy that finds runes?
Yeah, he's a dwarf.
I'm just trying to think.
That's Auras. Interesting. I don't hate that idea.
If you're playing this much equipment,
play some Auras as well.
Also, getting to go, SRAM into that one into draw two or something sounds really appealing. I also just like. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you finish, Kevin?
No. Yeah. I was done. I was just thinking about it.
That's a really good idea, I think, and I agree with you that, like, once you clean up the equipment base, you probably have a really good deck here. Like, as much as I love Bearded Axe and Plate Armor and Godsend, I think what you're going to end up doing is, like, play 3 Dancing Sword, 3 Embercleave, maybe, like, you know, 1 Maul of the Skyclaves and, like, 3 Fighter Class or something, and just have the tutor ability, which sounds really good. I like that you have so many dwarves. I didn't know we had so many, and that makes Magda pretty busted on its own.
Maybe not as necessary,
which is super
though.
Appealing.
Maybe not as necessary in this build. I'm thinking more and more I should just go with core.
What, the Magda?
Absolutely. Magda's what draws me to this.
Yeah, like, Magda is probably one of the best cards that are not seeing play in Pioneer right now, in my opinion. The card seems really messed up. So... Mm-hmm. I kind of like it, and you might even want to play like a couple of the one drops, even if they suck, just so you make your mana curve like slightly lower. But I like the Metallic Mimic, I like the SRAM, I like the Motorist. I really, again, other than the equipment base, I think this deck looks really interesting. Like, I think it's really well built. That's what I'm trying to say. And then you can maybe run even, like, the Double Strike Dragon or something, just so you can combo kill with Magda if you want to, but, I mean, that might be too meme-ish at this point.
Because I think you could either go all in with, like, you know, your dragons and maybe your vehicles, or you go all in with, like, your vehicles and your equipment. I don't think you can mix all three together, to be honest.
Yeah. I agree.
All right, why don't we go to the next deck, you know, for my sake?
Your turn.
Sure. So, are we talking my deck?
Yeah, your deck.
Okay, so let's mix it up with the Stompy deck. And again, my deck's all filled, so I'm like, I'm such a spike, just going like, yeah, let's take this good deck already and just put one new card in it. but
hey, I see at least 2 new cards here.
Yeah, we have 2 new cards here. Let me just open that. Okay, so basically when I was looking over the set, I was looking at Ranger class, and it looked really insane. Ranger class, it's just like on base level you get a 2/2/4/2, which is just fine for these decks, and then you get some really insane triggers on level 2, and then you get this ability to go through your deck at level 3, which seems really insane. It is a bit mana intensive, so I'm only playing 2. And then I saw the Werewolf Pack Leader, and I thought, this card is exactly the kind of card that Mono Green Stompy was missing, right? Because it's playing like Barkhide Troll, which is not a very good magic card, and it was like really looking for a good 2 drop, and I think this is it. Because the Werewolf does 2 things. One, it's just a good creature on curve. Just being able to play 3/3 for 2 mana and then pump it when you need to. It gains trample, which is great with Aspect of a Hydra. Just really good value. And then when you attack with it and 6 power of creatures in total, you draw a card. And that's something this deck was really lacking. So I think both of these cards just fill the 2-drop hole that Mono Green Stompy was lacking in. Because otherwise you're a really strong, consistent, aggressive deck. So yeah, I'm excited to see where this goes. Again, the sideboard is a bit of a mess. Because it has, well, you're playing mono green, so your options are quite limited. But in general, I like that you get to play Aspect of Hydra to cheese people out. I like to play Primal Bite. You get to play Collected Company, which is the best green card in Pioneer, probably. And every 3-drop you play just wins the game on its own if goes unchecked. So that's really appealing to me.
One question I have, I mean, of course, this hits really hard. How does it do against like board wipes, like stuff that destroys everything or exiles everything?
So I think surprisingly well, given that you have Company in your deck. But that was definitely an issue for the deck. But now with Rager class, where you can get to the fourth level, mm-hmm. the third level, and just grind them out. Before you used to run like some number of the Great Henge, right? But that's also super vulnerable to them just wiping your board every turn. You can't cast it. You just get stuck with it in hand. Ranger class kind of solves that problem. Both in making your elves more significant with level 2 and giving you the Vivian, like the Vivian monster thingy like effect where you can cast cards from the top of your deck. I think this might help it. I think this might actually solve that issue to some extent.
Do you think you'd be able to find room for the green new manland?
I actually think it's a good idea, but I really hate the new manlands. I think coming to be tapped on turn 3 and on is such a big cost.
Yeah, certainly.
But I think this deck
could... still play a turn 2/3 drop with it, but...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So this is what makes this appealing for this deck, and I think this could actually be very good here. I just kind of dismissed them initially, though, because of that.
I have one more question. In the sideboard, you have Threshing Brontodon. Mm-hmm. Is that really the best, you know, anti-enchantment Tates or anti-artifact Tate? I know you probably don't want to play Elvish Elvish Reclamation?
You mean Reclamation
Tate, so yeah. But what about the one that has the Mutate on it? It's like a 4/4 Trampler, I believe.
Gemraiser is a really good idea here. I really like it. Ooh. Especially on like
that's not a Coco target though, right?
Is that a Coco target? But I think that's fine.
That is a good point.
Because you can put it on your land really powerful.
Your row's the only,
you put it on top.
Yeah, for sure.
And then it's whenever it mutates, it destroys something, right? Yeah.
It also gives trample and reach, random reach cards in green. I do think that the sideboard is probably a mess right now. Like, we don't actually have a way to beat the Exalted Deeds combo, for example. So, probably need to look into that. And I was streaming Back to Natures, and I think maybe you can afford to cut them all, because Back to Nature is just not a thing. Auras is just not a thing right now. So, definitely more cards to look at here. But the general idea of like the main deck, where I think you can even probably trim like one more creature for an extra Ranger class and fix the mana base to include the mainland, and maybe, well, probably you can probably run Field of Ruin in this deck, can you? With like triple green cards.
That's tough.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from the Collected Companies, I say this is pretty budget as well, which is nice. Maybe the Ronuses are a little.
Yeah, Stompy decks are really. I think the Stompy decks are usually like 50 to 60 ticks.
That's a bad.
Even with the company. So you're probably good. And I don't know real life costs. So.
Yeah, well, you know, I think they used to be $150 decks because they were running two great henges. And now they'll be $50 decks if you manage to cut it.
I like it.
Yeah, I'm excited that you made this deck because Werewolf Pack Leader seems like such a good fit, and I didn't really have him. I didn't try it out yet, so I'm glad you did it for me. I will probably take this and make those changes you were just talking about. I think Garg's Harbinger for another Ranger class sounds great.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Harbinger is such a weird card. Like, it's either your best card in every matchup in like the matchup, or it's just almost unplayable. But when it's good, it just wins the game on its own a lot of times.
Yeah. It certainly can.
Back to Kevin for your last one then.
Yeah, I'm excited. All right, I got a fun one. So I'm going to give some credit here to CFS Talk. I don't know if he listens to our podcast, but you know, somebody I used to play with for a long time. He's been, I think, tearing it up with the Zoomers, I want to say. Big brewing group. And he just kind of tweeted out this idea. I retweeted it and had to go and give it a try out. Is a little bit of a combo with a new card here. What is the card here that I'm looking for?
Shambling Gas. I can't
remember its name, and it's late at night. Yeah, Shambling Gas. There we go. Shambling Gas. It's a 1/1 zombie for one black. When it dies, you can either target creature and opponent controls gets -1/-1 until end of turn, or you can create a treasure. And realized, you know, Liliana Untouched by Death, 4-mana planeswalker, has this ability. You -3, and you can cast zombie cards from your graveyard this turn. So if you've got a sacrifice outlet, you sacrifice Shambling Ghast, make a treasure, cast it again, sacrifice it, makes a treasure. You can do this as many times as you want, and then this deck has a number of ways to, you know, make that into a kill, either by making a Nantuko Husk huge, or by running Plague Belcher, which each time a zombie dies, your opponent loses one life, or just with, you know, Diagraph Colossus, every time you cast this zombie, you're making a black 2/2, so you can just get infinite 2/2s out of this. And a lot of these things are also strong, done non-infinitely. You know, if you're just casting a couple of cards from your graveyard with Diagraph Colossus, that's some great value. You know, I finally feel like this is a deck where Cryptbreaker actually shines. I didn't like that in a lot of aggressive zombie decks because it's not really an aggro card, but in a more combo, you know, more synergy-related deck, great card, gets you a lot of value off of your random creatures. You know, Shambling Ghast on its own has felt surprisingly good. It, you know, it can trade with a X2, so it can often trade with a 2-drop, or it can, you know, die and get you a treasure. That's been great. You know, Relentless Dead's just there to go along with some sacrifice outlets. You get Collected Company because pretty much everything you want to bring into play is like a 2 or 3-drop. That's pretty much the deck. And then, you know, Liliana's just not a bad card when you've got a lot of zombies in your deck. You know, she's a kill spell. Dark Salvation's a kill spell. So you got some interaction. You've got some ways to go over the top. You've got an infinite combo. Get to have some fun with it.
Quick question. Do we need as many Stitcher suppliers as you have? I mean, I know you want to be able to cast, you know, the zombies from the graveyard, but...
I'm medium on it. Sometimes it's been really good. Sometimes it's been, you know, the worst card in the deck. I could probably see a world where we cut Stitcher Supplier and work in something like main deck Mire Triton, or maybe a more aggressive zombie there. I couldn't put my finger on what I else wanted, so I ended up
probably like Mire Triton better just because of the Death Touch. It trades really well and also doesn't put as much into the graveyard, but it still feels it.
Yeah, yeah.
What was another thing I was gonna say? What about the 3-mana Liliana from Origins? Doesn't she have something where she flips, it creates a zombie token, and then you can bring non-legendary creatures back from your graveyard?
You know, that's not a terrible idea. That can bring back Shambling Ghast, Cryptbreaker are pretty good ones. She's okay. I feel like she's always been a big lightning
rod.
What's the word I'm looking for?
Yeah.
Lightning Rod, which I feel like when you're running Lightning Rods, you want other Lightning Rods, which I'm not sure this deck has that many of, but yeah, it's definitely
especially if she's a Collected Company hit as well. She's 3-mana, so.
She is, yes.
Yeah.
Mm. Anything you want to say, Emmett?
Yeah, so first of all, I really like this build. I saw the combo that CFT tweeted as well, and I was really excited by it. And putting this with Cryptbreaker seems really interesting. I do think that you have too many 3 drops. I think Plague Belcher is probably not great, but...
It's definitely a card. I was always like, that card's not good, and just as a face value has been better than I thought. You know,
really?
There's been a surprising number of times where I've had something to drop the other counters onto, and then a 5/4 menace is kind of scary.
Yeah.
With some incidental damage on it.
So the way I want to kind of look at this deck is I kind of want to see if, first of all, we can fit more 2-drops in here because you have 1s and 3s and nothing, yeah. Like only the Relentless Dead in between.
And, yeah, and Relentless Dead isn't great on 2. That's definitely
a I think you can slam Relentless Dead on 2, like, especially if you're going to run.
Yeah, I like that.
But like the card is just...
It brings good. Back stuff. Mm-hmm. It brings back your combo, so...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, Relentless Dead is a really messed up card when it works. And,
yes.
And I do, and I kind of want to make this deck, like, a bit less focused on the combo and do be more, like, of an aggro value deck that can combo you out. Because the combo just doesn't require a lot of resources, especially if you end up, like, milling some of the pieces. And just getting to play, like, this kind of value aggro deck with Collected Company that has a combo kill, that seems really appealing to me.
Yeah, that's something I've wanted in the format for a long time. You know, Modern certainly has that.
Yeah, for sure. So what I would be looking for, like, I'll go to do some Skyfall searches later, is a 2-mana sec outlet, if we can find something, because Nantuko Husk is a bit expensive. See if we can fit in a Woe Strider in this deck. And which is not a zombie, unfortunately, I just found out. It's a horror, but it has escape on its own, which is really nice. And then just, like, I don't know, maybe figure out a way to actually kill. Because if you have Woe Strider out, then the combo just lets you scry your whole deck. And then if you can find the one Plague Belcher and just kill that way, that could be it.
I don't mind that. That's not terrible. You know, Nantuko Husk is nice because, you know, if they just don't have a blocker, even without a third piece, just sacrificing Ghast and replaying it does make it infinitely large.
For sure. Yeah. Husk is definitely a good one. I don't know if I want 4, but the card... I didn't even know it was legal in Pioneer, honestly. I really wish we had Bloodthorn Vampire. It's like the 2-mana 1/1 Husk, basically. Which would go, I think, better in this deck, just because... I guess it's not a zombie, but being 2-mana is so big. I like the Polukranos in the sideboard, where it's like, yes, this is a zombie, I can play it.
Yeah, there I was just looking for the escape value. And I think there's a couple different ways that you could go with it. You know, you could try adding white, which would give you Wayward Zombie at 2-mana as another way to deal damage on every time a zombie dies.
Yeah.
And then I guess you could also run... You know, there is a 2-mana... free sacrifice outlet at 2, but it's not a zombie and it's black and white to cast.
Which one is that?
That might be an option. I don't know.
Oh, Cartel Aristocrat.
That's the Aristocrat. Yeah, Cartel Aristocrat. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you still do Collected Company with that. You probably could. The mana requirements aren't too ridiculous on this deck. I was also looking at, you know, there is, you know, there's that 2-mana zombie, the 0/4, that when you sacrifice it, gives a creature -X/-X. Based on how many snow lands you have, along with the there's a snow lord who you can recast from the graveyard for 3 snow. Those I were also looking at, but that would be probably a slightly different build.
I think you'd have to give up on company at that point, and I'm not to enable like the snow part, and I don't know if that's good.
Yeah, that would be cutting company, I think, and I think this is better as a company.
I was gonna ask if you think you actually need that or not. Like, can you just go all black? Or would it just not be as explosive or as effective?
You probably could. And I think, you know, 3-drops, it's hard to have a combo based on multiple 3-drops, and that's kind of where we're at. So that's where Collected Company kind of lets you cheat on that a little bit.
Yeah, I think I like the Company Splash as well. It's the card that just wins the game on its own when you get it. Like, a couple of these hitting well. But I think we need better hits. Like, as Ryan said, Stitcher Supplier looks kind of meh here. I could definitely see cutting those for, like, more 2-drops. Maybe even the Maya Tridents, where, like, the body is actually relevant. And gaining life is nice here. Just to survive longer against the aggressive decks. So,
I like that.
Definitely interested.
I'll reopen my Scryfall search again.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay to move on? Last one?
Yeah.
So that was your last one, my last one.
Oh, I'm excited for this.
I call it Gobapocalypse Now. It's no, I love the smell of goblin grenades in the morning. It smells like victory. I'm sorry I had to do it.
Wish we had goblin grenade.
But so basically, you know, we don't have Muxus or like Goblin Chieftain like we do in the, you know, or as Arena has in Historic. But I think we might actually have some cards that could still combo off in Pioneer. And Pioneer gives us more fun goblins to play with. So the idea behind this, the main card here that kind of got me thinking was Hobgoblin Bandit Lord. It's a 2/3, 1 red, goblin rogue. Other goblins you get +1/+1. We needed a lord. Great. Already really good. Has an activated ability, red, and tap it, and it deals damage equal to the number of goblins that entered the battlefield under your control this turn to any target, including players. So I figured, you know, that deck did a really good job of using Conspicuous Snoop and Skirk Prospector to, you know, sacrifice a bunch of goblins and just play everything off the top of your deck. And I was asking Kevin and a couple other people, and you said that when you play Hobgoblin, it checks everything this turn, even if it hasn't entered afterwards. So if I play 20 goblins before playing Hobgoblin, I can tap it and deal 20 damage. That's correct, right?
Yeah, that's right.
But of course it doesn't have haste, so how do we get around that? Two ways. I have Reckless Bushwhacker. This is a card that's not in Historic. So if you want to go wide with this deck and just, you know, hit everybody with all these goblins, you can use Reckless Bushwhacker. You know, it's got Surge 2. It gives everything haste and +1/+0. And there's also a new one that has a similar thing. So Battlecry Goblin is 2 mana. It's a 2/2. And goblins you control get +1/+1 and gain haste until the end of turn. So, you know, if you play this on turn 2 and they make a bunch of mana with Skirk and then, you know, play, you know, your Hobgoblin, give everybody haste, you can then tap it and give everybody, then you can deal damage. It has a secondary ability. It says whenever Battlecry Goblin attacks, if you attack with creatures with total power 6 or greater in this combat, you get a 1/1 red goblin token that's tapped and attacking. So you get more goblins, more fodder, basically, to sacrifice, which is great.
More goblins.
So, yeah, we got Goblin Instigator. We have Goblin Rebel Master, another card that's not in Historic. So Rebel Master just gets freaking huge. What else we have? War Chief, of course, to make everything cheaper. I got Ringleader just to grab us more goblins. I got two of those. I got Trash Master, because why not? You know, it's against a Goblin Lord. You're making it cheaper. And you can take out any, especially you guys were telling me about the book. I'm like, well, I should play this main then, you know, in case I come up against those book decks. and then Legion Loyalist as well, just as, you know, make it harder for your opponents to block. I was thinking 4. I wasn't totally sure if I needed a bunch of those. But, you know, especially good with Rebel Master, so that Rebel Master, you know, can push through all that damage. And then in the land, one thing I wanted to point out is the Den of the Bugbear. So I'm only playing like 22 land. I might be able to go down even further than that, actually. But that's the comes into play tapped if you have 2 or more other lands. And you pay 4 mana, and it becomes a 3/2 goblin creature with whenever it attacks, you get a 1/1 goblin teacher that's tapped and taken. That's amazing to me. I would play 4, except I'd be worried about not hitting my mana or, you know, like having it come tapped in. But you got some Mutavolts in there, Field of Ruin, of course, like you said. And then the sideboard, I'm worried about that life gain deck, so I got Tybalt's in there, Chain Whirler, Pile Driver against blue decks. I don't know if that's actually any good, but I wanted to play it anyways because it just gets huge. Crater Maker for colorless or artifacts, Red Cap Melee for other aggro decks that might be a problem for me, and then, of course, Damping Sphere for combo. So what do you guys think?
Okay, I love it. I didn't actually think goblins could be a thing in Pioneer. When I saw like the Hobgoblin spoiler, I was like, yeah, we don't have good goblins in Pioneer. And then when I looked it up, I was like, wait, we do have good goblins. So I really like this. I think this deck can be super explosive and has like this combo angle, like you said, which is super interesting to me, with like Snoop and Ringleader just fueling your Prospector until you kill them with Hobgoblin. Or with the Bushwhacker, honestly. which is very nice. I love Loyalist. I think that card is probably... I think you probably want four of those. Just because it makes blocking so hard.
What would you drop?
At like such an early stage of the game. It's so good, in my opinion. And the sideboard looks really, really good. I like Pile Driver. I like Chain Warder. I think Tybalt could probably just become Rampaging
Ferocidon.
That's going
to kill you, though, with all these goblins even though that's, putting the play.
Yeah. So I think you need to, I need to play a bit with the deck to get a feel for how many creatures you actually put into play every turn. And I think you could actually give up on the Dambic Sphere just because you can probably erase Lotus Field. And then you have more space for, like, I don't know, more Pile Drivers just because that card also just kills them super fast. I really like this deck. Goblins is one of the first tribes I played because I started playing during Lorwyn. Mm-hmm. So that was my go-to tribe, and I really liked it. And I'm excited to see what Battlecry Goblin and the Hobgoblin Battledore do. I think this deck can bring something new to the format in like the super go-wide deck that's also combo-ish.
So what do you think, Kevin? How do you feel about this?
You know, I'm passing out over here. I think it's interesting. I think it's a little fair. I wouldn't mind something a little bit more unfair if there is an option. You know, maybe go and stick a God Pharaoh's Gift in here or something. But give it a try. Okay. Maybe the one drops is where I'd look at. You know, there is like the one that taps to deal damage to something might be better.
Sorry.
Tough here.
Tough to find cards, I'm sure. You stuck with it almost to the end. Yeah.
Yeah. No Siege Gang Commander?
I was thinking of that, actually. That was another card I was considering. If I can get rid of Damping Sphere, maybe I'll get rid of that, and then I could put, like, Trash Master in the side or something.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe.
Emmett, your last one? Okay.
So my last deck.
I think he's gone three already.
No, I did two. Yeah. Last one is, like, the Prowess build, which, again, there's not much to talk about here. Basically, it's Bruninho's prowess list from a couple of months ago, except making the Stormwing entities into Demilich, which here seems even more promising to me. You get to play a more aggressive shell with it, which I think takes better advantage of Demilich's power. You are much less vulnerable to Graveyard Hate, which means people can't really sideboard it in against you, which makes Demilich better. And Demilich is a wizard. So maybe we can go all in on the Wizard's Lightning. I'm not sure about it. But I like the idea. I like playing Demilich and Arcanist with Stern Dismissal just as a bounce spell, a tempo spell that lets you go, you know, like solve the problem of how do we remove big creatures in blue-red. And I think this is probably the best shell for Demilich I can think of right now. So... nothing groundbreaking here, except I think Demilich just is an improvement over Stormwing.
I like really nice. Bedlam Reveler with Demilich, because Demilich... I mean, Bedlam Reveler, you can... you put stuff to the graveyard, I mean, you can play it again, right? With Demilich.
Yeah. Also, Reveler is just a mess up card.
Yeah, it can be.
And I wonder if you want, like, two...
It's a builder on Treasure Cruise.
I said, I wonder if you want two of the Demolish and then two of the five-mana Prowess guy as well. They could do, like, a split, maybe.
So, I can definitely...
I was wondering if those work well together or not.
Yeah, I think you can definitely consider a split. When I build decks with new cards, especially weird ones like this, I tend to just, like, play four, see how it goes, and then figure out from there. But I can definitely see a world where we end up playing, like, two Demolish, two... Stormwing to Bedlam in the main deck or something, and just like split the difference and have the best of all worlds.
I do like Demilich with Stern Dismissal. That's a great interaction, though. Like, it's gonna the it Stern Dismissal. You get counter everything if you have power four. Right. That's one interaction.
No, that's not the one. No,
that's Stubborn Denial.
That's Stubborn Denial. Stubborn Denial is interesting too. The problem is Demilich doesn't play well with counter spells initially when you need to get it into play. So I actually switched the Dismissal, which is the bounce spell. I put it in the main deck instead of the Spell Pierce. Might be wrong. Exactly. I don't know. Interested to find out, at least.
I'm kind of disappointed Kevin didn't talk about an Insult deck. I was going to do that.
You know, I was working on them. I feel like people have kind of figured them out. I didn't think that I needed to, you know, put my spice on that, because I think that people do have a pretty good idea where to go with
that. I had an idea I posted in my Jank channel today about doing like insole, but with all equipment. You know, just equip all your stuff, equip your equipment.
But, with dancing sword.
I did put a dancing sword on a dancing sword earlier.
Oh, that's great.
Two-handed.
That is achievement unlocked.
Double fisting. There we go.
Two-handed. Double fisting.
All right. Why don't we call it an episode here? Mm-hmm. I think that this is probably a perfectly good place to end. Yeah. Guys, I hope you enjoyed listening to this. We're going to be tweeting out all the episodes. They're also pinned in our decklist channel in our Discord. So find that through our Twitter. At MTG Pioneer is the best and way to reach us.
And also I wanted to ask you guys real quick, I want to do something special for this episode. I want you to choose one of these decks and we'll put them up on Twitter and then have, you know, our listeners kind of decide which one they like the best. So which one would you submit? Which of yours would you like to submit to this challenge?
Oh, mine are all fun. That's tough.
Oh my god, I'm gonna lose this so badly.
I might go Bard class. I think that's
okay. So Bard class. What about you, Amit? What would you choose?
I'll take the mono green deck.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I'll take the mono green deck. I actually think that's the All
right.
I like it.
I'm gonna go goblins just because, I think it's probably the most consistent, less meme-y, the least meme-y, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but
it plays all the good cards.
All right. Do you want to give us your Twitter
information? I'll do mine real quick before we finish off with Emmett. So, you guys can find me on Twitter at Yoshwenky, Yoschwenky. And Emmett, how about you? What do you want to promote?
You can find me at EkerosMTG. That's EkerosS. I stream four times a week, and I tweet a bunch. Hey. So, go check it out, I guess.
Yeah, play some of these sweet brews, hopefully, in the upcoming stream.
All right, that's going to bring us to the end of our episode, guys. Thank you so much for listening. We are your first Pioneers podcast. We look forward to being your go-to source for Pioneer information online. What was the sign-off we had last time?
Flinging out or something like that? Yeah, that sounds gross.
We're flinging out. All right, let's do that. All right, good night, guys.